This is the Super Sports Schools Podcast, bringing you stories of our future stars, powered by Spur Steak Ranchers.
1, 2, 3, go!
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Super Sports Schools podcast brought to you by Spur. I'm Alex White. Joining me to host today's show, Tim Athama is in studio with me. And today's episode is all about tennis. You know, it's a sport that I love.
I've got into it. This is the project we
It absolutely is. And we've got, I think, the smartest looking guests we've ever had. It's Gavin Crooks and David Duguay involved with Tennis South Africa. Gavin, in fact, the president. We're going to ask you guys to introduce yourselves, tell us a little bit more about who you are, but welcome to the show.
Alex, yeah, thanks very much. It's really great. Tim, likewise, thank you. It's really great to be here and always happy to share our passion about tennis because it is a passion. And absolutely. In my case, in terms of tennis administration, nearly 30 years now involved in tennis administration. The last 11 years of which has been president of Tennis South Africa. For my sins at the moment, I'm also the acting CEO of Tennis South Africa whilst we embark on this somewhat lengthy process of trying to find a CEO for Tennis South Africa. But it is what it is. So yes, come through the ranks, as they call it, bit of tennis at a decent school in KwaZulu-Natal. I'm not going to stir and say which one, but...
Michael House. No.
Sorry, what was that? What school was that? No. Hilton. And then after that, played league for the club and all the rest of it.
Okay.
And incredibly passionate about it and really wanting to make a difference.
Yes. And it's that passion and that experience that we want to lean on today as we talk about youth tennis. But I know David as well. You're part of Tennis South Africa, and you're quite involved with the schools. So can you tell us a little bit about you?
Yes, I'm obviously from one of the best schools in the country, from Uffies. Yeah, like all teachers, you get involved in all sports, eventually and landed in tennis. And I think I've been on the board since about 2003. So in the past, school tennis wasn't part of the board, but due to the inside of the board, realized that tennis is actually the base, the school tennis is the base of the sport, brought us into the board where we had a say and could put our heads together to grow tennis because we believe that school sport is all about growing numbers. So main aim for schools, tennis in the country is growing numbers. It's an easy case of probability. The more numbers you're pushing at the bottom, the better chance of someone will pop out at the top.
Yeah, awesome. And we're going to talk about all of that, get into the schools. You mentioned from Uffies, Tim, I think the only sort of tennis experience we've had on the podcast before, I've interviewed Quenna Mpaka from St. Stithians.
Yeah.
And we know there was Kevin Anderson from St. Stithians, one of our more recent successful tennis players. But you will have remembered when Cape Town had that fever for the match in Africa.
Oh, when was it?
2020. Yes.
Just
before COVID.
Alex, you and I have been friends for a while, and I remember leading up to that, that's all you could talk about. I'm sure the rest of the tennis community was like that, just up in arms and ready for...
Tim, yes. That was a fantastic kick for tennis. The fact that we don't have a top flight tour event in South Africa. We last had that in 2009 through to 2011 when we had the ATP 250 at Monte Cassino. You know, unfortunately, a combination of how that whole system works and the ecosystem works around that, as well as the fact when you look at what it costs to run one of those events, because it's all done in US dollars, it becomes prohibitively expensive, et cetera. And to find the sponsorship support when you do the conversion, it becomes a challenge. And if you look at where post-COVID, where the line in the sand is in terms of financial viability for players, that's dropped from somewhere in the region of the top 80 down to somewhere in the top 50.
Yeah.
That's the kind of numbers.
So it's tough.
It's tough. Extremely tough. Not only is it extremely tough in terms of the standard that you've got to maintain. But it's also, someone's got to have some deep pockets to get you there.
But like you said at the start, when we were talking about the match in Africa, and that was such a cool event, we filled Cape Town Stadium, highest attendance for a tennis match ever, which was quite special. It shows that South Africans love tennis, we love watching tennis. And being there, I was there, and I've got the photo behind me here, one of the coolest interviews I ever got to do. I was talking to Roger Federer. I'm blocking it myself, but there we go. That's young Alex interviewing Roger Federer, who, of course, I like claiming is half South African, with his mother being from South Africa. But being at the event, all the ball boys and girls were tennis players. A couple of them even got involved along the way. So I want to get a bit of an idea. Maybe, David, you can come in on school tennis in South Africa, where it kind of is at the moment, and what's most exciting about it for you at the moment, because there really is this excitement around tennis in South Africa, and there are lots of people in South Africa who love tennis and love playing.
Oh, we've got actually big numbers. We've got an IPT coming up in January, Interprovincial Tournament, where three age groups will participate, and the numbers in that tournament is about 600. That's how many kids participate in three age groups in that tournament. I mean, as a tennis, as a, actually one of the smaller school sports, that is big. And then also, if we look at festivals, that's something that really grew in the country. I mean, when I got involved, it was the Wayne Ferreira Festival, was about it. I think Kirsten was also one of the earliest ones. Currently, there are over 60 tennis festivals in the country, which is great. I mean, we would like to see someone playing tennis every day somewhere.
All right.
And also at the development level, we started with the development tournament sponsored by RCI.
RCS. RCS, I get that right.
I think they started in 2019, if my memory serves me right, with about 300 entries.
Now 300 schools.
300 schools.
300 schools.
Yeah, and now we're talking quintile 1, 2, and 3 schools. Those are schools that's not paying school fees. And I mean, this year, I think there were almost 800.
Yeah. So at the moment, without wanting to take away too much of David's steam, right this weekend, and one of the reasons why I'm up here, is we have the RCS finals. And at the commencement, about 6 months ago, there were 798 schools participating. And each one of those schools has four players participating in that team. And it all leads up from a district through to a provincial level and to the national finals, which is happening out in Benoni.
So they're around 3,000.
Yeah, so you multiply that. Exactly, et cetera. In addition to which, all right, to those numbers, you have wheelchair participation. And there's a wheelchair schools RCS event happening at the same venue at the same time. Obviously, those numbers are a little considerably less, but just in terms of disabled people playing tennis, et cetera, it helps motivate, it helps build those numbers. I think it's also important to understand that those numbers and those kids that are playing aren't necessarily looking to become professional tennis players. They're looking to ultimately join the ranks of the good club players, playing top-end leagues, et cetera. And, you know, that ultimately is the base, and that's the core of all tennis. There, on the latest Global Tennis Report, there are 102 million people in the world who play tennis. And that definition comes down to somebody who plays tennis twice or more a month. So there are 102 million people. That number is actually up from 2 years ago, around about 10 million, because 2 years ago it was about 92, so the current numbers are about 102. And just to give you an indication, I don't know whether any of you here know where the men's ATP ranking falls off or where the WTA ranking falls off. And I'll give you an idea. The men's is around about 1,900. And the ladies, I gather, if I remember correctly, is about 1,450. So 102 million people playing tennis, and the world rankings, the ATP ranking and the WTA ranking, 1,700, 1,400. That gives you an idea of how tough it is there. But to the RCS, it's about living up to the Tennis South Africa mission, which is wanting to see somebody playing tennis somewhere every day and getting feet onto courts, exposure, and really taking benefit from the fact that tennis is currently shown to be the most healthiest sport that you can play, both physically and mentally. The average tennis player who plays tennis lives 9.7 years longer than anybody else from any other sport. And to the final point is there's that magnificent YouTube video that circulates every so often of Rafael Nadal hitting a ball with a gentleman who's 102 years old. I hope he's still alive, and I hope he might make it to Malaga this year, which is, as I think the world knows, is where Rafa will actually be doing his swan song in terms of saying cheers to professional tennis. So
yes,
yeah, it's a really magnificent sport.
Are we convincing you to pick up a racket, Tim?
You know, the funny thing is, when you mentioned the stat of the people that actually play tennis, you said they can't feel they play about twice a month. I realize I'm actually part of that stat, because I do have a group of friends from my church that once every 2 weeks we go down. And like you say, it's a mixed doubles. Anyone comes down. And I mean, my friend's little sister, she's in grade 8. She beats most of us just because it's that accessible. And it's just all you need is a racket and a few balls.
Yeah.
And you can get out there. You can be active.
Bringing you the sport you care about the most, this is the Super Sport Schools Podcast. You might call it living your best life, but we call it Spur Cheeseburger Mondays. Because for only $84.90, Mondays become legendary when you can choose between 100% pure beef, succulent chicken, delicious soya, or tender rib cheeseburger. All served with Spur-style crispy onion rings and golden chips. So, when life gives you Mondays, enjoy a Spur cheeseburger. T's and C's apply. Spur, people with a taste for life. Bringing you the sport you care about the most, this is the Super Sport Schools Podcast.
I love that you brought up the story about you playing every few weeks or so, and I like that you mentioned that we're going to live 9 years longer.
Yeah, I guess so.
9.7.
Add
another couple of months.
Yeah. There's extra few months, so that's key. We wanted to talk about some of the upcoming stars in South Africa to focus on some of them. With Super Sport Schools, we've been seeing a lot more tennis online. It's being streamed. A lot of these young tennis players are getting exposure earlier on. We're going to be able to follow stories. We're going to find at that RCS the next Kotatso Mojane before she plays in some professional level. We're going to have already seen her on Super Sport Schools. And already Kotatso Mojane winning doubles at Wimbledon this year in the wheelchair event. There is inspiration there. There are South Africans achieving at the highest level. And you've gone over how difficult it is to make it to the highest level. But who are some of those youngsters that each of you are excited to see in the future?
Now, obviously a rising star, Leo Matthijssen, already joined the Davis Cup team. It's still our oldest Leo.
18. Yeah, he's 18.
18 years
he's
old.
18, playing a couple of professional matches. And then, as I mentioned, the under 16 boys team of Conor Doig, young John Botma, Jaden Summers, they're all going to Turkey. We are expecting to be seeded somewhere around about 5 or 6. So I would expect our team to have a good shot at getting to the semifinals of that week in Turkey. And those are the up and coming, and from a Tennis South Africa perspective, those are the kids that we're looking to invest money in. You know, it becomes, unfortunately, it all comes back to economics and cash. And, you know, do you spend a whole lot of money on having one tournament, a professional tournament in the country, or do you rather look at financing and helping those kids go through to the professional ranks and you send them as a squad overseas? And if you look back at Tennis South Africa's history back in the late 80s and the 90s, they had a squad system under a fellow by the name of Keith Deeprem, and they went overseas as a Tennis South Africa squad, and they played in two sort of blocks of 6 to 8 weeks. They went and played professional events overseas with a manager, with a physio, etc., helped financially, so it wasn't a freebie, etc., and at the moment, our strategy is to look at that. As David says, the Leo Matthijssen, he's just come back from spending a stint up in the ITF High Performance Academy up in Tunisia. And it's now a case of looking to see how we can take him and move him forward. That said, we've also got some older players like Philip Henning, who's been at college in America, has come back and he's turned professional and looking to see how we can assist him financially. So he did very well this year at the at two of the events down in Hillcrest at Curo that they hosted in terms of the World Team Tennis. And he won the 1 week, and I think he got to the quarterfinals of the $25,000 event. And that helps them financially, but it also helps their ranking points because, can I say, you know, the ranking at times is actually more important than the cash, because depending on your ranking and where, you know, who else is entering in a tournament, that depends whether you're seeded, and that then starts having an effect in terms of where you are in the draw and whether you get a bye and who you end up playing. So that whole ranking system is critical to managing your success.
And who you get to play. Out of the 102 million, where do you think you'd be?
102. Honestly, with my hand-eye coordination, it's not looking great.
Right at the bottom there.
Yeah. But I was going to ask, because you've shown us that there are many places where you can show your talent, where you can show out and try and become one of those few, select few that make it through. But for those that are watching at home, I'm sure there are a lot of people that are in the system already. What would you say as a coach yourself, as somebody that's watched the system, what does it take to actually be? What kind of work are you going to need to be putting in to get to that level?
Other than the cash.
An incredible hunger. If you don't have that incredible hunger to succeed on a tennis court. So remember, if you're playing singles, there is only one person on the tennis, there is only one person on your side, and that's yourself. If you don't have that hunger, all right, you're already behind. Okay. Then work out the number of hours you need to spend on a court in order to start being competitive at a professional level. And it's in excess of 20,000 hours. I think Federer, if I remember, and I stand corrected on this stat, but I think he said that before he turned pro at around about 18, because he won Junior Wimbledon when he was 18, he'd already spent close to 20,000 hours on a tennis court. I think Kevin Anderson wasn't too much too different well in terms of being up at 5:30 in the morning, even if he had a broken arm, you know, because he went to a funny school that they pushed him down the stairs. And he ended up having to practice for 6 weeks while his right hand refused and all the rest of it. But it's a huge commitment. If you take someone like Carlos Alcaraz at the moment, so he committed himself to tennis at the age of 9. And the number of hours he's spending on a tennis court every day from the age of 9, you know, those numbers, just, you can do the, I can't even think of the arithmetic as I sit here, but it's huge. It's huge numbers. And if you're not committing yourself to turn pro around about the age of 15, I have a question mark. If you look at the stats in terms of the number of people who come out and turn pro after being at American college, I'm saying you're a couple of years behind already.
You have to start so young. And we've spoken about this, long-term athlete development versus like early specialization. And for sports like rugby and cricket, a lot of the top athletes have played lots of sports and maybe only just really gone into one later on. But tennis, it sounds like you have to start. We've missed the boat, Tim.
There's actually a book written on that. I'm reading it at the moment, where they compare Tiger Woods, who at the age of 4, they already saw something special and was only golf. And Federer, whose mom says wait a bit.
Yes.
So the meaning out in the book is that it's good to do few sports while you're young. I mean, when I arrived at Duffy's, my number one tennis player was AB de Villiers. Mm. He played Cravenweg fly off. His cricket wasn't too bad at this stage. Yeah. So I agree with that perception. I think especially at primary school, it's good to try your hand at more than one sport. I read Andy Murray's book. His mom also introduced him to soccer. And I mean, he's one of the quickest guys on court. Great footwork. So I think there's sense in trying a few things while you're still small. Wait, age 14, 15. Your tennis, normally at 16, is your growth spurt. If you stay small, you're in trouble. You know, what's the average height of a tennis player at the moment?
6'4".
6'4".
Oh.
Yeah, I'm like, far off. That
I think we should have a match, Tim. It sounds like you play more than I do now. I'd love to play, but I think we should have a game.
No, yeah, obviously, it helps a lot if you go to a support system, either a coach with a group or a school where you can play your normal league tennis. That's not really that important, but I mean, it takes you through the ranks. The players mentioned our Philip Henningray College, St. Stithians College. Many of those players went to normal schools where they played normal league tennis and then make the breakthrough.
And I think one of the messages coming out of this is that it is so almost unlikely that you're actually going to make it to the top. So putting all your eggs in one basket might not be the best idea when you're still a kid. Enjoy, have fun, play sports. And then sort of when you're getting to that age, 10 to 14, that's when you've got to make the decision. But I think in South Africa, we love sports so much. Everyone loves playing lots of different sports. So I don't think we have a problem with that. Just to end off, the chat and the discussion, what you'd like to see happen in youth tennis in South Africa in the next couple of years. Obviously, we're seeing more and more tennis on super sports schools. There's more exposure for young players, more tournaments, more excitement around it. So just where you'd like to see youth tennis in South Africa go.
So, Alex, from my perspective and as part of the strategy that I'm wanting to adopt for the next 4 years of my presidency of Tennis South Africa is to develop the elite, is to get those talented kids from school level into that elite squad that ultimately our next Davis Cup team and Billie Jean King Cup team will come from. How one is going to do that is where the challenge is, because we've already acknowledged that it costs a lot of money to do that. But it still starts at school on the basis that you have to have someone like a David Jaguar at Uffies who's passionate about tennis. You know, in my day at school in KZN, you know, you had the Maritzburg Colleges that were the team that was way ahead. You've now got a Kearsney that's probably one of the top schools. Kuro are doing a lot for tennis in South Africa, not only hosting professional events but developing and looking to give bursaries and scholarships to elite sportsmen, including tennis.
Yeah, they're doing a lot for sports, including athletics.
100%.
It's incredible what they've been doing.
And they are looking to partner with us on a number of future events, which will hopefully inspire more tennis players to make the decision to become pro as such. And, you know, you've highlighted the cost and you've spoken about the cost. Inherent in that is, you know, at 14 years old, think about the risk of, do I pull you out of school to now become a professional tennis player and you break your ankle 2 years later, but now you've sort of given up your education side at grade 8 or something like that to focus on tennis? That's quite a leap of faith that you've got to take. And as I say, so few sportsmen on an individual sport come through. But it's important that from a Tennis South Africa perspective, we provide that enabling environment. We provide the opportunity. We look at providing the opportunity. And as you've highlighted, you know, if we can get more role models coming through, they're going to pull more people into tennis. You know, whether at the end of the day it's playing top school tennis, whether it's playing top leagues, etc. And ultimately, we'd really like to get an open division playing inter pros against each other. So they've got no aspiration to become professional tennis players, but you know, they've all got their own businesses, etc. But they just love tennis and they're passionate about tennis. And, you know, that just creates the depth. And with depth, you get strength. And, you know, mom and dad go and play on a Sunday afternoon. The kids are watching from the side. They want to become involved. If you've got a passionate tennis, if you've got a passionate master or mistress at a school, that's going to help promote tennis as well. I think the final thing from my side I'd just like to add, which is one of the challenges I believe that we face in schools is the requirement that they should be hiring qualified coaches to actually coach the kids in school. so many schools around the country, we see literally pick somebody off the street to come and hit a tennis ball to kids across the net. And that isn't the way you do it. Tennis South Africa is one of the 19 countries in the world that has gold accreditation status for its coaching program in terms of the courses that it offers our coaches, in terms of the ongoing professional education that the coaches have to complete on an annual basis. And also parents and the school has the comfort in knowing that as part of that accreditation, they've passed all the safeguarding courses, they've passed all the first aid courses, they've got their police clearance, et cetera. And schools need to take advantage of that, et cetera. We have currently just on 700 qualified, certified coaches on our books. And I really appeal to schools out there to make sure that when they are looking to employ a tennis coach to come and provide their first or second team or their tennis program, that one of the first questions they ask, are you licensed with Tennis South Africa? So
yeah, and I think that's a great note to end on there. David, anything to add looking forward to in the next couple of years? Obviously, Afis producing another Johan Kriek.
Well, we had Christian Vos to play Davis Cup just the other day with Philip Hennen. They've been mates since they've been like under 12 together, playing against each other, playing with each other. And they were a great combination in the Davis Cup. Yeah, I would like to see numbers. Obviously, like I said in the beginning, if we can push the numbers, and people must realize you can play tennis without a tennis court. You can. I mean, I've got grandchildren in the backyard. They've got this little net up with their rackets, with these special balls where they play their own little great games. And if you often read books of the great sport like the War Brothers and so, I mean, many of them were made in a backyard where they played backyard cricket. And yeah, so I would like to see numbers, because if I can succeed in numbers, Gavin will succeed in getting those top players through to play competitive tennis.
That's a classic story for Bjorn Borg. I don't know whether you've ever watched the movie that shows you Bjorn Borg's growth and him playing in the garage at home, hitting the ball against, moving the cars out and hitting the ball against the wall of the garage. I mean, how many kids do that?
I can remember doing that as a lighty. And that's the way to start. But guys, thank you so much for joining us and diving into some of the state of tennis in South Africa and talking about these tennis. Tim, I've discovered that you play more tennis than me, so now we need to have a match.
Yeah, you'll still beat me, I can promise you that.
Oh, I don't know. Well, it's going to add 9.7 years onto our life, so I think that's the
important point.
The 101,999,000th ranked and the 102,000,000th ranked, we'll have a game. Okay, cool. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of the Super Sport Schools podcast brought to you by Spur. We have new episodes every Sunday at 6 p.m. here on DSTV channel 216. You can also catch the episodes you've missed on DSTV Catch Up, whether that's on DSTV Stream or on your decoder, where you can also find highlights from Super Sport Schools from the past week in sport. But we'll see you next week. For now, bye-bye.
This has been the Super Sport Schools podcast, bringing you stories of our future stars, powered by Spur Steak Ranchers.